Hi, this is David Franco and Teresa Dietze with Practical Work on Self. Tonight we are going to discuss New Day Every Day, that's Chapter 21, and then move into Chapter 22, I Can Do Anything. So, hi David, where would you like to start tonight?
Yeah, well, let's... The format is that we introduced Chapter 21, New Day Every Day, weeks ago, and I think we'll go into a more depth discussion of it, and then we'll
Sorry, David. Somebody's banging around. Okay,
and
go ahead.
And then we'll introduce Chapter 22, I Can Do Anything. So we'll start with Chapter 21. And do you have it there, Teresa, or do you want me to go ahead and read it?
I can read the header.
Sure, go ahead. Thank you.
Machine has the disease of tomorrow. Tomorrow is the only day which, just perhaps, could be that not quite attainable day of roses. Work, however, we can take nothing for granted.
So, in part, we don't quite understand what it means, in work, however, we can take nothing for granted. But we have a piece of it now after 20 chapters behind us, and that we've been working on this material. And certainly we have a sense now of what is meant by the machine and how it tends to operate. So we're going to go ahead and go through this chapter in a little detail. And as we go through it, we're going to have some points that I'd like. I'm actually going to ask you to expand on. Now, don't forget that these talks are being recorded. They're being recorded, and these recordings are going up for others who don't have a chance to be in the moment of this moment of creation. We are in this moment of creation right now as we're working together. That's the space that we want to find within ourselves, and that's how we're going to begin working. So let's go ahead and start then on Chapter 21. We can persuade the machine to surrender to ordinary sleep because the machine is reasonably certain that tomorrow it will open its eyes and find everything more or less the same as it was today. So what we're finding now is that the E.J. Gold and Practical Work on Self is helping us through different phases of how our machine works. Now we're getting a more global sense of a particular type of sleep that the machine has. So this may not be necessarily one event where you notice sleep, but rather it's a general filter that we work under. And so now we want to begin discovering general filters that we work with and begin uncovering them and working through these techniques to see, gosh, what can we do about it?
David, what do you mean by a filter?
By a filter, we can take it in a number of ways. Let's say you're a photographer. You could put a filter over your lens that turns everything a slight yellow. And there are times when you want to do that. But if all you do is you always have that filter on, suddenly, you see everything through that filter, and you don't even notice that you have the filter on. So, this filter is in our assumption base that we work with. So it's almost as if everything we have carrying forward with a premise, and this particular premise that we're talking about is this idea, the disease of tomorrow. if we turn to page 160, middle paragraph, I'll read that. The machine has the disease of tomorrow. Tomorrow just perhaps could be that not quite attainable day of non-stop absence of pain, even if today was thorns and yesterday was shit. Death, no matter when it comes, will always seem to the machine to come at just the wrong moment, just when everything is about to go right. Death cheats the machine of this hope. This is a special sleep from which the machine is sure it will never wake up. Death can come at any time, but most easily and without our notice. And I'm reminded of the poem by Emily Dickinson, because I could not stop for death, it kindly stopped for me. And so, the disease of tomorrow, does this ring a bell for you? Do you see that as an overlay as you go through the day, or more importantly, as you go through tasks and you say, oh, well, it'll be better tomorrow?
David?
Yeah?
I want to read a comment online when you were discussing filters. Townsigo wrote a comment saying the filter is the sand of sleep.
Say it again. Who was this?
Townsigirl said,
okay,
the filter is the sand of sleep, question mark.
The sand?
Sand of sleep.
I would say that the filter is more a indication of sleep. It's an indication of a broader, more fundamental premise that we carry. It's, I'm not sure if the word was brand or whatever it was, but yeah, it's a filter that we have to cleanse our eyes of before we can see things in a sense as they are. I'm answering that at all.
Diana, something. Like with the Sandman, I'm reading Townsigirl. Like with the Sandman, she's continuing her comment.
Oh.
It's something that's in your eye in the way of seeing reality as it might be when we're awake. Yes, Lee, that's how it works. It's like something in your eye that's in the way of being able to see in an awakened manner.
Yeah,
and the most common way that I see this show up in myself as well as other people is waiting for life to start. Like, when I have a partner, then life will start. When I have the job that's really my work in the world, then life will start. When I know my purpose in life, then my real life will start. This isn't my real life now. It will be my real life after I, you know, fill in the blank. So that's a way of withholding from full participation, and it becomes a habit that's so ingrained that we don't necessarily notice or hear ourselves doing it. Or like for myself, there was a long period of time when I really wanted to get out and travel, or I really wanted to go for hikes, and I was always telling myself, well, I can't really do that because I don't want to go alone. And I know a lot of people, especially women, will do that. And then eventually when I caught myself at it, then I was a little afraid to camp by myself, so I bought myself a van, and I took off and went up to Alberta for 10 days. And that's an example of realizing that it was possible not to wait around to live, because life isn't roses, and isn't perfectly the way we have it in our mind. One last thing I want to say about that last class, David said something about, well, it wasn't in the class, it was in a discussion that I had with David. Do you remember what you said, David, about how we get so focused on one possibility and then we're disappointed if things don't go exactly that way?
Yeah, I think so, and that's another example of, so those are broad filters. Those are examples of broad filters that if this or that should occur, then I'll be okay.
And then I'll be happy. And if anything else occurs, then categorically we're not okay because we've been holding out for that one thing that we had in our head. When in actuality, when we bring ourselves fully into the moment, we find all kinds of possibilities in that moment that we can't discover when we're asleep because we're holding out for a different moment that may never come.
So what we're talking about here then is this intoxication with, and tomorrow it will be better. And so it's this particular special filter that we're trying to capture. We're trying to capture it and see how it works in our own life. These are the exercises, as you've noticed, are getting more and more subtle. They're getting more subtle because we have more tools. The person that enters into the work on self, who's serious about it, and gets to a point where they want to do that, and that'll come about when you want to do it, no sooner.
When you want to do what?
Work on self. And when that comes about, then you begin to take responsibility for what's going on about you. Now, and that's a different day that does then occur, and that is a new day every day. Let's go through some of the...
To take responsibility, a lot of us have different interpretations of the word responsibility.
I'm sorry, was there a question?
Yes, what does that word responsibility mean to you? What does it mean to take responsibility? That's so much open to people's interpretations. That word has so much charge that it can be hard to understand. So I wonder what you mean by responsibility.
In this context, I mean to work with, look at, and see what is about you as it is, rather than with these rose-colored glasses of it'll all shift itself and be better tomorrow, and accepting what actually is going on and working with that.
So by responsibility, you mean like work leverage?
In this particular context, I mean, rather than hoping for something or putting on something that it is, in fact, it's like if someone says, oh, here it's, I believe it is like this, that's one form of engaging with the reality about you. Another form of engaging with the reality about you is to recognize what's actually going on and not putting interpretation upon it, but accept here is what's going on, and then working with that, and you begin from that position.
So a lot of people these days will try to create some reality for themselves or to manifest something by focusing on the way that they want tomorrow to be and bringing attention through affirmation into trying to create something for themselves. What does that have to do with what we're talking about?
Well, let's read the paragraph at the bottom of page 160. Each day the machine happens to live on is due mostly to blind luck. So many things could happen. If we should happen to wake up the machine tomorrow morning, we should, at first glimpse of the new day, fall on our knees with gratitude for another chance to accomplish what we failed to accomplish with the machine yesterday. And now we're beginning to uncover what is meant by a new day every day. We begin the day, and we begin it afresh with the idea, maybe I can actually accomplish some of my work today. And the spice that you put in there is the sleeping machine puts the spice in, oh, I'll get whatever I can get done today. But in this spice it is, this may be the last day that I have a chance to approach and work with and wrestle with this work task before me. That's the new spice. It's not like I have an infinite numbers of tomorrows to accomplish it. It's happening today. It's happening today, and I grasp that day and the moment before me.
So that is work leverage.
The attitude, if you can begin to drop this special sleep of the tomorrow, then you have intention about it, you begin to develop a work lever. That's correct.
I'm going to get us caught up on comments online, okay?
Thank you.
This County Girl, jam today, jam tomorrow, but never jam today. Pinhog, thank God, I've gotten over that one, .. At age 68, I know tomorrow will not be better. County Girl.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty good. County Girl.
So it's sweet.
Hey, that is because it is always today, right, Pinhog? Pinhog, yep.
Nice.
Yeah. They're a little playful.
It is today. And like right now, at this moment, for an hour and a half, we have this particular opportunity. Realistically, this opportunity is quite unique from anything that goes on during the rest of the week. You may have other events that are similar to this, but for some of us, this is a unique hour and a half where we bring together and work with group mind to uncover our group genius in a sense.
David, I have a question about something, a comment you made earlier when we were starting to talk about filters. And I think you said, I believe, like let's say, I believe this about today, I believe something about myself or about a relationship. Isn't I believe sleep of the machine?
Yes. Generally, if it's belief, it depends on the belief. And in that, if I remember correctly, that particular context was, that's my assertion as to how it works. That's my interpretation of the mechanism of what we're talking about. So I state categorically that that's how it works. But I'm happy to discuss it and find, should we have, more depth to it that we can understand, I'm very happy to understand that with others.
So it depends, Diana, whether it's a provisional belief or a rigid belief that one intends to keep around no matter what. A provisional belief is, maybe you believe in the Easter Bunny and then you grow out of that, and the belief continually tend to morph through the course of the life. And when we get so rigid in our belief that we begin to project the belief onto our experience rather than forming the belief out of continued experience, that's when it becomes a problem.
Okay, thanks, Jay.
Jay, can I make a contribution?
Please.
Yeah.
you know, I've often said that EJ's books are an extension of Gurdjieff's teaching.
Yes.
And the first of the first book of Gurdjieff's trilogy is entitled Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. I have that book here in front of me in which Beelzebub is discussing the divine impulses of faith, love, and hope. So with regards to that, Beelzebub says this: thanks to this abnormal hope of theirs, a singular and very curious disease with the property of evolving arose and exists among them even until now, a disease called tomorrow. This strange disease tomorrow has brought the most terrifying results, particularly for those unfortunate three-brained beings there who chance to learn and become categorically convinced with the whole of their presence that they possess some very undesirable consequences, and that in order to be delivered from these consequences, it is indispensable for them to make certain efforts, which they even know just how to make, but never succeed in making on account of this maleficent disease tomorrow. And indeed, that is just a maleficent part of this terrifying evil which, owing to various causes, great and small, is concentrated in the process of the ordinary being existence of these pitiful three-brained beings, that by putting off from tomorrow till tomorrow, even those unfortunate beings who do, by chance, learn about all that I have mentioned, are also deprived of the possibility of ever attaining anything real. This disease, tomorrow, so maleficent for your favorites, has become an obstacle for contemporary beings not only because it totally deprives them of all possibility of removing from their presence the crystallized consequences of the properties of the Orton Kunde buffer, but also because it hinders most of them in honestly discharging even those being obligations of theirs that are quite indispensable in the established conditions of ordinary being existence. Thanks to this disease tomorrow, the three-brained beings there, particularly the contemporary ones, almost always put off until later everything that needs to be done at the moment, being convinced that later they will do better and more. So anyway, just the background for how this particular chapter came into existence.
So that's an expansion of what EJ's talking about in terms of this special disease. That's what we're up against. And we actually introduced this a couple of weeks ago. And I'm wondering if any of us have had a chance to sense that specific disease in yourself. Is it something that you can bring forth and put your hands on, so to speak?
I don't know if I can sense it, but I can certainly observe it.
Okay. All right. Good distinction.
Thomas said yes.
Excellent. Yeah.
So, I sense it, and sometimes when I sense it, I find myself too weak in the moment to do what I know that I need to do in the moment. And I used to get angry with myself when that happened and beat myself up. And then more and more I began to be very invitational. So I try to invite myself to do what I need to do. And if I can't do it, then I keep inviting myself. So it's kind of like a cat waiting at a mouse hole. I try to keep my attention on it and wait for a moment when I can make a response. And so I'm being present to it even though I'm not quite doing it. And then all of a sudden, the moment will shift a little bit at some point and I'll be able to jump in and do it in that moment.
Okay.
County Girl says, well, sure, every time we tell someone, see you tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good label of that disease and how simplistic it is. It's
well,
just,
let's do lunch is classic.
It just flows out of our lips when, in fact, it's just air passing through those lips. There's no meaning to it. So we say, yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. You don't know.
I actually had an experience today of needing to talk to somebody and passing them in the parking pad of where I live and being too nervous at the time to say what I needed to say. And I came into the house and had to, I guess, to do sort of what you're talking about, of stay present with the issue and wait for the next moment to have a conversation. And then I did about an hour later. But I didn't feel good about myself when I passed up the first opportunity.
So in that particular moment, and I'm not sure if this is the same thing as Teresa was talking about, but for you, Diana, it was very clear. So at that moment, there was a belief. First of all, there was a barrier. Something came up in you that was a barrier to speaking to that particular person. You said, I think I heard the word nervous.
Yeah, I would have said fear, David.
Yeah, so you were in fear. There was some sort of a fear. And because of the fear, rather than, in a sense, being compelled to face that fear at that moment, there was this, oh, I'll do it later. I'll do it tomorrow. Or the big hope was, gosh, maybe it'll be better tomorrow. And the fear will be there.
Exactly right.
And so part of it is us finding why it is there are specific mechanisms that block us. Now, the disease of tomorrow is what gets us off the hook. Does that make sense to people?
It pretends to get us off the hook.
Right.
No, in that moment, it gets us off the hook. In the,
okay.
From the
point of view,
it gets us off the hook.
Okay, Sama says no, Townsend Girl says no, Four Paws says yes, and Townsend Girl says off what hook? So I think we need to continue the dialogue.
Yeah. By hook, I mean responsibility. So in your example, and I have an example too, you saw this particular person and you were on the hook for speaking to them. You were responsible. But something says, oh, I can just do it later.
Right.
Oh, I can do it later. It's okay. And that's what I mean, that it allowed you to quote unquote pass by that responsibility.
Yes, like I went back to sleep.
Yeah. So you accepted the fear as your guide at that moment. The fear was the guide, not the duty in front of you, the job in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with that about the fear. As for the responsibility, I understand what you're saying, David, and I agree with you, but I say that it doesn't get us out of the responsibility because we just tell ourselves that it's getting us out of the responsibility, but we're still responsible.
Yeah, but at that particular moment, she was out of responsibility. Just in that, we're just talking about that specific moment. It put it off. It was the manana syndrome. She didn't
have to face it. I get it. That's the experience. But then when we expand from that experience, one way that I try to get past that, if I catch myself doing it, is by telling myself that I'll still be just as responsible for it later. And
well, that's how you're working with it then. If that, in fact, is how you work, then that's how you offset the concept of the disease of tomorrow. But the disease of tomorrow is quite prevalent. And Diana shared what we've all gone through, that it's a specific issue that we've all gone through.
Well, the visa companies are capitalizing on that one because whenever people, you know, put things off, then there's kind of interest to pay a lot of the time. Penalties of some sort in a lot of different life arenas.
Exactly. So let's go to, there are three exercises that we have here that are given. On page 161, each night as we lay down with the machine, we should strive to see sleep as a kind of death, understanding that there exists a very real possibility we may not, for one reason or another, awaken in the morning. If we enter sleep voluntarily, allowing this little idea to continue during the night, and it happens not to influence our ultra-suggestible machines into an immediate termination of life, then we ought, at dawn of a new day, to feel the impulse of real gratitude for the possibility for work presented by an additional day of life. That's the first one, working with you when you lie down to go to bed at night.
Oh, man, I have trouble with that because I already do that by accident almost every night. I start to fall asleep, and I jerk awake because it feels like a death, and then I don't sleep. And then after being waking up every time I try to fall asleep, the next day I might feel less capable of gratitude because I've been awake most of the night.
Well, you have a good possibility here. The second exercise is when we wake up in the morning, besides jumping out of bed like a jungle animal, eyes open at full, all central alert, we should spend the first 5 minutes doing nothing but trying to awaken the machine. So my question to everybody is, why is it that you jump out of bed in the morning? What's the mechanism that occurs? You wake up, the alarm goes off, whatever happens, boom, you jump out of bed and rush to do whatever it is you rush to do. And this exercise says, no, hang out for a couple of 5 minutes and thoroughly awaken the machine.
I've got some comments online.
Great.
T, when you were talking about your sleepless night, Poundy Girl wrote, no one is grateful for that, T. Sinhog says, not a lot of jumping these days.
Got it.
I always get my best guidance in the morning before I get out of bed. And a lot of things become clear to me when I first wake up. Things like answers that I didn't have the day before just show up. Sometimes I have to write when I wake up in the morning because so much stuff comes through.
Yeah, that's true. I would say if I get guidance, you're right. If I have a dream that speaks to me, it's in the morning. And if I can hold it and wake up with that instead of waking up with, oh, my gosh, I need to get up, I'm hungry, I need to go somewhere, call someone, look at my BlackBerry, that's the best time for guidance. And I don't capitalize on those moments.
I can't move into my day with equanimity without pausing before I get up and feeling into what transpired in the night and what the quality of the day is in terms of the way I feel impacted by it.
Townsend Girl says, I had the experience with the awake, in parentheses. I'm not sure what she means yet. Sinhog says, yes, Teresa, the hypnagogic state, very revealing.
That's the state when you're able to visualize. When you first wake up in the morning, it's sort of right in between dreaming and visualization, where if you access your guidance, you can either see, or in my case, just experience things directly, because the veil between the sleep and the wake is so weak.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Can
I add something? No, I want to share with you that in the 5 minutes, but beside that, I agree, I'm not jumping crazy out of the bed. It takes me a little while to do it. But when I get up, my 5 minutes, I spend it practicing awakening the machine, the first exercise, and maybe the doorway, and try to observe my movements and being aware of myself, and preparing breakfast, just observing as much as I be conscious of myself.
Nice.
And maybe those two exercises, I mean, doorways and awakening the machine, are the ones that have predominant in those 5 minutes. That means that I am awakening the machine, right?
Right.
I will be aware of myself.
So what's occurring there is, Guillermo, these are starting to become alternate habits for him. These are not mechanical habits, because they each of them take a certain amount of effort and intention. But he's beginning to develop being habits where they're guiding him rather than jumping out of bed and rushing off in fear to the day.
Habits that you adopt and nurture.
More comments online. Townsy Girl, I realize how asleep I am when I talk to people, but I have walked away and realizing, oh crap, I was so not there. How sleeping. Forepaw says, I love those minutes before jumping up. Townsy Girl, 1 a.m. I have been able to call or open to being more awake during the conversation, and I have been feeling so joyful and how vibrant, in parentheses, tipping a hat to Silverdale, it feels.
Yeah.
Sama, these days I spend about 30 to 60 minutes waiting for anxiety to fade as I realize, crap, I'm still here.
Very good.
It can happen sometimes. And when you're first coming through the veil in the morning.
And, Towsy Girl, in your situation, when you're speaking to somebody and then you have a sense that you were really asleep while you're speaking to them, that also will begin to wake you up. Because the next time you do it, there'll be 1% of you that realizes, hey, I can wake myself up. Or maybe all you can say is, I'm asleep while I'm doing this. That's a form of beginning self-observation. And as you do it more and more, that'll become a forum for you in which you can work to begin to awaken the machine on a more permanent basis. Just to continue on a little bit on the reading, back on 161, after you've taken this 5 minutes, EJ says, then we should form the idea in our mental centrum that we have awakened in a new world. We must not assume that what we see today is the same as what we saw yesterday. People and things we think we recognize may not be exactly the same today as they were before. In this life, we must take nothing for granted. We cannot assume that just because our surroundings seem familiar, that they have any relation to what we learned about our outer world yesterday. Not only will everyone's state be different, but in a real way, everything will be different, just like a new world. And I can tell you that it in fact is different. If you awaken in that manner and you are different in it and you have that sense of gratitude and that sense of newness, it actually is different. The world is different. Because if you put your filter on the world in the way that we always do, it doesn't allow the world to be different, does it? And the interchange.
And we especially do that in relationships.
Yeah, and that's a good example. And we have relationships with individuals that we meet during the day. We begin at saying, oh, he or she is going to be the same. My parents are going to be exactly the same. You never give them an opportunity to be different. But if we can be different, then electrically there's a different interaction possible with that person.
That's right.
We can take a responsibility. We can bring something different to the poker game.
And then they respond differently, and then you begin to shift out of the pattern. There's so much of the time, what I hear from quite a few people when I work with them is, I ask, well, what if you try to make a totally different response, and I'll be specific, and they'll say, well, it won't do any good. And what that means is it won't, the other person will continue to be the same person. And I think it's really important when we make new behaviors, we're not doing it with the intention of trying to make the other person respond differently. That's usually doomed because we're doing it still out of the assumption that they're the way that they are. But when we really do this exercise, we do it correctly. A lot of the time, we create real new possibilities. And it's about us. We're focused on ourselves and what we're doing and in relationship, yes, but are part of it. And as we really focus on that and the new possibilities come forth, there are amazing changes that can happen in the way the other person responds. But we're not doing it for that reason. We're doing it because it's our work to do it.
Exactly.
I've got comments online.
Please.
Townsy Girl, yes, some of it's going to back up and then I'll catch up. Okay, Townsy Girl, yes, I've been really focused on how asleep I am or am not. Thanks, David. Sama, haha, yes, yay, it's sad but very true. These todays, tomorrows, and yesterdays have not been so good lately. Townsy Girl, I'm sorry, Sama. Silverdale, we strive to maintain the awareness of the vibratory sensation of the non-phenomenal self, which has no comprehension of multiplicity and diversity. Sama, this topic seems very appropriate for me. Ginger Rogers, still it's a universal inner anxiety. Ginger Rogers,
yes.
Again. I'm sorry?
Yes, there is a universal anxiety right now.
I'd say. I'm sorry, if that's my comment. Ginger Rogers, Sama, like the absolute. Townsy Girl, I've actually been sensing vibrations in different places on my body as I try and call the non-phenomenal self. Silverdale, you strive to practice and strengthen the non-phenomenal self from day to day so that there is no tomorrow. Ginger Rogers, that's after we've been up for a while. Tomorrow is beside the point when you first wake up. Okay,
nice.
I'm up right now.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, so what we're doing, we're striving to find ways to awaken the machine and to initiate the non-phenomenal self, to begin making that part of our everyday life, part of our moment-to-moment existence as we go on. So in this chapter, we have a number of methods for doing that. If we consciously work, as on page 162, we must be very careful to observe the machine and everything else with new eyes as if seeing a new world for the very first time. For now, we are not interested in every little detail of this new world, only in the gross manifestation. Later with practice, we will see much more. So, can we see, can we do this, where we see everything with new eyes as if seeing a new world for the first time? Can we do this? Can you do it right now?
For a minute.
Good.
Good. For about a moment.
Good. And when you are in that space, as Silverdale is telling us, there is no sense of multiplicity. There's no sense of the other. There's no sense of expectations. You're just in that space. While you're in that space, just for that one moment, sense it, remember it, smell it.
And pay attention to what it feels like in your body and what the electrical energies are doing. Begin to try and memorize the sensations.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by sense it. You sense it, all of those various elements. So when you get there, which you can do, right, once again, right now, you can go with new eyes. Let's do it one more time. Right now.
I have been to share with you, without even pretending to do these exercises, a bit just observing, of gazing things, and magically, really, very magically, came to me a new side of something. I was just looking at homes the other day at night, just gazing at my neighborhood. And all of a sudden, I can see the homes. I got out of the familiarity of building the way that we build homes. And it was amazing. It was really magical how my eyes were looking at the homes. And I said, why would we build things like these? How capriciously we design homes, for instance, in that way. It was like the machine, the sleeping machine project, doing the home like this, a home like that. The personality is being expressed in these constructions, and it was quite magical, you know, to see homes in a totally unfamiliar way, like a really fresh eye.
Well put.
And it just brought to me a smile, you know. It's just amazing, you know, how my eyes were looking at something like for the first time. I say, wonder why these people would do homes like these, human beings.
And sometimes you'll see a structure that'll just pop out at you. And you'll know that that architect was awake, that they were operating from their non-phenomenal self, their essential self, when they did it. They were operating from the deepest instinct within them. They just proceeded in that manner. They weren't following the rules. They were following a deeper instinct. So can we see things through new eyes? And then just to jump ahead, in this experiment, we must try to see ourselves as a complete stranger to the machine and to this world, exiled from our familiar surroundings, living a life totally uncustomary to our habitual experience. We must learn to think, feel, and sense ourselves in exile from the planet yesterday, with only the vague possibility of arriving at the planet today, where we are like newborns who know nothing of what we may be in store for us. And that's okay, too. That's an okay place to be. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to catch this up online, David. I apologize.
Please, go ahead.
Townsy girl, so I am curious, what happens with the machine when we are more awake for more prolonged time? Yes, wow, David, you are a brand new person.
Right. I am brand new.
You are. Silverdale, we begin to become self-actualized or God-realized. We find ourselves by a state of continuous self-remembrance. Silverdale continues. We strive through self-remembering to establish a common integral vibration
which is our own unique beingness. Beingness is the basis for immortality, that is, conscious maintenance of self in the space-time continuum.
So, if... let me continue reading. There, this next paragraph is, I find it very key. Too often do we mistake one word for a similar word, one object for another like it, and one person for someone else just because they have similar features. We often make someone pay for something another did just because they remind us vaguely of someone who wronged us in the past, but is now not available for possible expression of our revenge. Even when waking in the morning and seeing those we take as ordinary friends and family, we can try to see that they are not the same as those of yesterday, but even in an ordinary sense. Every day we are really in a strange land, among strangers we do not know and cannot completely know. For today, they are not what they were yesterday, and we cannot depend on them to be the same.
I'd like to insert something.
Okay.
It's a real service to others to see them in that way. There's, it's so easy to hold other people hostage to our projections onto them. The really good example is, for instance, when somebody always tells the kid, well, you're just like your father, or you're just like Uncle George, or something like that, and then, not you, George, another one, and then the child grows up without much possibility of feeling like a person in the child's own right. And we do that to a lesser extent to people all the time, where at one point I left the Sufi order because people thought they knew who I was and I had grown phenomenally and they couldn't see me. And I felt very impacted by the impressions and projections that tried to maybe hold me into being or even push me into being who I was before. It's a big service to people to look at them with fresh possibility and to allow them to become instead of holding them to an image.
Well, all of that really is dependent on our work of being in the essential self, so that we're not operating from the sleep of the machine and the planet yesterday.
That's right.
And just to continue, we must rearrange our idea of the world to see that each new day is really a new world, and that those things which appear the same really are not the same. So what are the ways and means that you can think of that you can bring that effort into your everyday world?
I'll make a comment on this because I'm struggling with this lesson right now in
Excellent.
That I am projecting anger on a man that I barely know because I, in essence, want to punish him for what harm that was done to me many years ago by another man. And it's startling. I mean, I'm doing a lot of, you know, Teresa and I are doing a lot of work on this issue right now, and because of the work, I'm waking up to it, but yet I can still so quickly go to sleep in this man's presence, and it's frightening to realize the severity and the intensity of this pattern. And this is just one example in my life. I mean, it's startling how strong my machine is still running this pattern.
Well, I think it's very brave to share that, and it's something that we all have, we all go through, but actually sharing it gives you a great deal, too. And when you see this thing and you share it like that, you realize this has nothing to do with that guy,
right.
Nothing whatsoever. He's an accident out there,
right.
He, she, it, whatever the heck it is. It's just an accident in relation to planet yesterday. That's what you're bringing forth. So if that in fact is something that occurs in you, and you're the one that has to understand that, nobody else, if that's what works in you, then when you get to that position, what you'll see is, do you bring planet yesterday, or suddenly, if your eyes are open and to the new world before you, he won't even, in a sense, he won't even be there. Here's another thing. If you open to yourself in a new world, that particular person and type may not even ever show up.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah. But it, where does that work start?
Oh, God. It's been a lot of painful work inside of me of making the separation between the original womb and the original man and the man that I now, you know, pass by in my gym and realizing they're two entirely different people, yet in my machine I merged them. I absolutely merged them as one.
So if you walk through the day with new eyes, you won't even see, it won't even occur to you that that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually be in a new world.
Mm-hmm.
It has to come from you. And you can practice it. How do you practice it? That's what EJ is giving us in these chapters. What do you do when you go to bed at night? How do you awaken when you come up in the morning? Is it just automatic? If it's automatic, guess what you'll be greeted with? Or do you arise and you look forth and you say with gratitude, I have one more day today to accomplish my work?
Sam is saying, David, say that again, please, about opening yourself up. Townsy girl, it begins with not seeing through the filter of the old womb. I have a terrible time with that as well.
Yeah.
Well said.
Pardon?
Well said, Kelsey girl. Yeah.
We're ready for the tape change.
One more comment before tape change?
Yeah, go ahead.
Pause. So it's the machine that's filter?
Yeah, the machine is the filter. That particular planet yesterday can't exist in the non-phenomenal self.
So it's not only the sand in your eye, it's the eye and the brain and the nervous system and the whole body when we're in the machine consciousness.
Right. That's what we bring
and
forth.
And the organs and the electrical systems and, you know, everything that's habitual.
Was there, hang on one second. How much time do we have? Did Sama have a question that I missed?
She had just earlier, when we were talking about opening yourself up, she had said, David, say that again, please, about opening yourself up. But I think we've gone back over it. I don't know, Sama, do you need anything else?
Just real quickly, you open yourself up by being in the new world, having eyes for the new world, and working with that. That opens you up to the new world. We're going to do a tape change now.
Go ahead. We're still recording this time on the audio. And I'd like to remind everybody that we will, after the course is over, have a couple of question and answer nights, which will also be on Wednesdays soon after the course. David and I haven't talked about dates yet, but they'll be in the next month. So you'll have some continuity through that.
Okay. So that kind of is at the end of chapter 21. How are we doing with that?
Two more comments.
Good.
Kelsey girl. Okay, T, that is a lot of sleep and try to wake up. Forepaws. My machine wants to cry because it's been caught.
That's good. Townsy girl, yeah, remember how we talked about shame and guilt are tools in the machine.
Yeah, good point. Well, before we move on to the next chapter, I'd like to just make one little comment. It's a little exercise that I find myself doing that fits with this chapter. And it's very simple. It's beginning work, but I like to do it. And what I do, it's similar also to the portal exercise. Whenever I see the date, or when I write the date, or when a client writes a check and they put the date on the check, I try to remember this date will never happen again. And then I remember this moment will never happen again. And it helps me to remember that it's almost like the portal exercise, but it's a different feeling. It's in relation to time and knowing that the moment is precious and will never be repeated.
Yeah, this moment is precious.
Are you ready to move into chapter 22?
Yeah, I am.
Was there another comment first? Okay.
That's for me.
Chapter 22. Someone's trying to talk. Go ahead.
Sorry, T. Townsy Girl was just saying, oh, T, I do that near the end of the year. This is the last November 17th of 2010.
Well, it's the last one every single day. That's the only one, and the only, if you had a time stamp for the second, it's the only one that'll ever be like that. It'll never be the same moment and the same day and the same year and the same hour. It's always something new. Okay. Chapter 22, I Can Do Anything. Whereas I can do anything, the machine is a congenital bungler.
Oops.
Oops, what?
A congenital bungler, huh?
Yeah, that means from birth. From the birth of the machine, the machine bungles. That's the nature of the beast.
If we recognize our present state, we must inevitably feel the urgency to work toward the awakening of the machine and toward our own transformation. Thoughts? Reflections? What about that urgency? Anybody? Do you have a sense of the urgency before you? We know that we are at war. We know the enemy. It is our own complacency. Our own willingness to be carried along by the sleep of the machine. But once we decide to work, we must accept everything that comes to us in the way of work. What do you think that means? What does that mean?
This line is now unlifted.
That we should go head on to the job. Actually, I think that is the only reason why we are alive. We could be alive just for the sake of nature, but we are alive because we are given the opportunity to wake up the machine.
Good.
So it becomes really primordial thing. That's the urgency,
yeah.
I think. Isn't it, David?
Yeah, very good.
I have some comments online.
Yeah.
Townsy girl, I like the phrase congenital bungler. Isn't that where the non-phenomenal self is crying to wake?
forepaws don't have it, at least not as much as I would like to. Townsy girl,
okay.
I think being here is a sign of the urgency. Silverdale, the I referred to is our non-phenomenal self, which is the basis for practical work on self. So as a vibratory sensation, I can do anything, but our historical personality is always hysterical.
Most importantly, we must learn to make decisions rapidly. If we are offered a work task, it is vital that we accept the task immediately and without hesitation.
Yes, sir.
Good. Do you do that? Do you recognize the work task when it comes before you?
Yes, but...
That's huge.
Yes, but going to sleep would be my answer.
Right. Yes, but phenomena. We soon...
And it's really big, but...
We soon learn. If we remain...
Yes, but I bungle it. and I'm afraid... Yes, but... I'm afraid I'm going to bungle it, and then I get seized up thinking about all of the things that could happen, and that sucks.
But if you actually are in your non-phenomenal self, if you're in your essential self...
Then I just do it, and I'll over it like white on rice.
Then you don't bungle. You're doing, as long as you stay there, you can do anything.
Well, even if I do things that don't work out very well, they're learning experiences and they're valuable, and from that state I'm not inclined to judge them as bungling.
That's good, too.
They aren't bungling.
Oh, Townsy Girl has a comment, David, in answering your question. She says, every time I walk through the portal...
What was my question? The urgency?
Responding to the work. Responsiveness
yes.
to the work. The
okay,
opportunity.
Good. Okay. Good. It must be quite clear in our minds that if we refuse work, we refuse help. We must understand that it is sleep which is our enemy, not those who prepare us for evolution.
Mm.
Do you believe this?
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Is this best in your life?
I believe it, but certainly have seen a lot of people that, I mean, we've all had the experience of being given feedback and becoming defensive and shutting down, even when that feedback is given by somebody in love and with respect in terms of helping us on our path. In fact, that's one of the reasons that we have a work group is to be able to reflect things to each other, and yet sometimes we get very resistant to that.
Yeah, I want to tell you, my little machine has no idea what you just said.
Remember when we got deep into the work and then you got really mad at me?
I know. That's why I said it this way.
And then I tell you, is there some other way I can serve you, or am I doing something that, you know? And then you don't know, this is exactly what I want and exactly what I need, but you still get mad.
I know. All the time. Oh, my God. Classic.
Pretend that you have discovered some substance which we will call luckium. Whenever you carry this luckium in your pocket or as a charm or a chain around your neck, you feel absurdly, even stupidly optimistic about everything, estimating your abilities and willingness far beyond your ordinary limits. While you carry...
That was the Jupiter transit. That's what Jupiter transits do, excuse me.
Okay. While you carry this substance, luckium, around with you, you feel wonderful, very happy, very lucky. You have supreme confidence in yourself, and whenever anyone asks you to perform a task, without considering once, or even pausing for reflection except in consideration of your actual organic safety, you immediately express abject glee, agreeing immediately and unquestioningly to perform the task regardless of any dislike you may have toward it. But is that how it works in you? Without even pausing? You should cheerfully grin like a village idiot and reply, "Sure, I can do anything." Just be sure when you say this that I is really speaking. Because, well, I can do anything, the machine happens to be a congenital bungler. This insane optimism and amiable willingness to do almost anything at all could soon make us very popular among our lazy friends.
Okay, I've got some comments on this this luckiness. Sama, I haven't found any yet. Townsy girl, here, Sama, I have extra. Oh, man, you want me to be excited about cleaning kitty potty?
Sama, sometimes I think you have found it, actually. And when you're in that state of I, and you're in, you're not in the machine full of considerations, you do say yes. You do help out. You do go forward. And you are in, I can do everything. You're not in the considerations. So what's the exercise in this chapter?
Has to do with the way that we meet the possibility of work. To do with bringing ourselves forward in a certain way, where we're filling up with possibility.
Okay. Anybody else?
Townsy girl, oh, you are not looking through filters and judging. You are simply being. Sinhog, I can do anything.
Good.
This line is now unmuted.
Just about everything? Anything? I mean, shouldn't we be careful what we take? Maybe dangerous.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you on that one. I was thinking at first I was thinking, oh, am I supposed to turn into Wonder Woman when I'm reading this chapter?
Yeah, you are.
Townsy girl, does anyone else think that in some ways this is a tough exercise, intimidating in a way? Sama.
A piece of cake,
sure, Sama, be assertively, stupidly optimistic about everything and willing to go beyond our usual limits. Townsy girl, Kitty is Wonder Woman. So...
Tell me, what is congenital bangler?
You always mess it up. consistently mess it up. Always.
Irmo, do you have the volume on your computer? If you do, you need to turn it off if you're on the phone.
No, I'm not in the computer.
Oh, okay, all right. It's just this, we're getting some feedback. That's okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Somebody has their volume on their computer up, and they're on the phone.
That's right.
So you mess it up.
Yeah.
So the exercise will be then rounding, wrapping up the concept will be?
That's what I'm asking you.
Well, I guess it doesn't get back to T what you were saying. It's like meeting opportunities to do the work. I view this as meeting opportunity to do the work with enthusiasm. Instead of, you know, I don't know about everybody else on the call, but I know personally when I have an opportunity to do work, I'll frequently grind my teeth, kick the sand, you know, pull the hat over my head and just, you know, want to sulk away instead of jumping up and down and going, oh, yes, I really want to do this. And I think that that's what this is really about.
First piece of work somebody can do is to turn off the volume on their computer. Right, Diana, that's, we see teenagers do that all the time, or even children, you know, clean your room, do the dishes.
Sama says, it's really tough for me, Townsy girls, to be a yes person. Sama, that is right, no thinking, just do, brilliant. Silverdale, we are trying to discriminate between work performed by the non-phenomenal self and efforts made by the fine machine. Yeah, definitely.
Good.
That's a very good comment. I'm not really sure that it's about taking on everything that anybody asks as much as being able to take things on from the non-phenomenal self. It's not about becoming a doormat and becoming everybody's slave in an automatic way.
Okay. So, do we have enough to go on to even attempt this exercise, or is it still a little too vague? We have plenty of time.
It feels pretty vague to me. What do you need clarified?
Well, I guess I keep getting hung up on the paragraph about pretend that you have discovered some substance, which we will call luckium. So it sort of seems like... Oh, just pretend like this can be easy and fun. It will go well.
Do you have the volume on your computer? We're still getting a lot of echo.
I'm hearing it too, but my volume is down really low.
Okay, well, turn it off completely, please, before we go on.
I still have the echo.
Okay, then somebody else has it.
Everything you guys say is echoing to me.
Overdale,
right, and that's on.
Overdale, is your volume down?
My volume is off entirely.
And I'm just on the telephone.
What's happening is the... did you take the mute off? Overdale?
Well, let's see, I never had it on.
I usually don't turn it on either.
Really? Okay. Well, we have a... mechanical mystery and don't know what the solution is.
So Silverdale, try turning the mute on.
Hello?
Better?
Yay, no echo.
Hey.
Oh, there it is again.
Should I keep going, Pete? I've got some comments online.
Yeah, go ahead.
Silverdale, we are trying to discriminate between work performed by the non by the machine. Townsy girl, so for me, it is about willingly and cheerfully being awake with conversations. Is that maybe closer? Ginger Rogers, I think you have the key there, Silverdale. Silverdale, Luckyem refers to the vibratory sensation of the non-phenomenal self, which can blend with all and everything.
I find or write that the theory of the non-phenomenal self, that's easy to understand. The thing is, in the practical, in the attitude that we have is when I beg. I know it's a positive attitude, and I know it's a go-do-it attitude, which I'm familiar with that. But it's still not clear if it is just the work that we have to do in ourselves, is regarding to anything. I cannot discern. I think the word here is discernment. I cannot discern the target of what should I be ready to go for.
Thomas says, example, sometimes we are given a task and everyone stands around and discusses it, thinks about it, plans for it. I usually say, oh, for God's sake, as I walk over and do it.
Yeah. That when you're in a group, that's what happens a lot, and that's what I've seen you do, Sama. But for Guillermo, I think that what we're talking about is when you're in that space of non-phenomenal self, like you were referring to when you get up and you have work on the portal exercise and watching the movements of the machine, that becomes, when you're doing that, then you can work with, yes, I accept all comers.
All right.
From that point of view, when you're there, what's it like? How is it to say yes to things rather than yes, but?
So I must be awake. I have to be first in the state of awake, and then I do that. Otherwise, the personality gets in.
It will inevitably get in. But if you're in the waking state, then the things that come to you are work exercise.
Good lead, David. Thank you. That's a good lead. Thanks.
Thomas says that now I'll have to do optimistically. Darn it. Ginger Rogers, if you're in a human body, you do human activity and tasks. The machine has its tasks, and the non-phenomenal self gets to participate or not. Non-phenomenal self can do anything. One thing it can do is agree to hang out with us.
What's him?
I think we're pausing, aren't we?
Okay. Or pause. Can you send me the log?
Townsend girl says, I must be asleep because I am feeling puzzled still, lost in the echo.
The echo's pretty bad. Yeah, I think we are.